the International Year of Light, as proclaimed by UNESCO via the UN General Assembly. It followed from there that in metrology we decided to make it the theme for our World Metrology Day, which is held every year on the 20th of May. So it's measurement and light. We will be joining the international community in commemorating this wonderful innovation that came to us. We at NUMESA have designed that poster that you see projected on the board. The CIPM has adopted what NUMESA started a couple of years ago to bring metrology to the public in a simplistic format by way of preparing posters every World Metrology Day. And now we've gone to second. After about 8 or 9 years, it's come back. We are the ones that designed this year's poster. Last year's poster was designed by the Koreans, and the other years were designed by other national metrology institutions across the world. We will be commemorating this activity in a big way at NUMESA. We have organized a few visits in May to schools. We are running competitions for employees at NUMESA. We are running competitions at schools to bring this metrology knowledge and awareness to the school, because it's not something that's taught at university. Yet it is very important that kids are aware before they go to university that there is this career that they can take. Of importance, why I went against the advice of not changing the presentation is the fact that we'll be having a gala dinner on the 22nd of May, where we annually, as we have an award evening for our top performers in the organization. So this year we decided to invite our stakeholders to a gala dinner, which will be hosted by the NUMESA, where we will be commemorating the World Metrology Day. So may this coincide with World Metrology Day on the 20th. We are celebrating, but we sometimes do have fun. The theme is music and light. I invite you to have a jol and a ball with scientists and see the kind of humor and excitement we can generate just combining science, which music is based on, and entertainment. The outline of my talk, the original one, is I'll give you just a little bit. I think we've all gone through the strategic plan and possibly the Amendment Act, so I won't dwell much on the legislative mandate. I'll look at vision, strategic objectives, and the role of NUMESA in the Technical Infrastructure Institute. Then I'll talk to where to next, just looking at the strategic direction from 2015 to 2020, and then I'll look at APT for 2015-2016 specifically, and the two outer years, and then just highlight a few key strategic risks. The legislative mandate is very clear. It's in line with the Measurement Unit and Measurement Standards Act, number 18 of 2006. The mandate being to provide for the use of measurement units of the SI, the Standard International Units, and certain other measurements, like here in the Western Cape, you have the Cape, and other measurements like those, that we then provide for the use of those. We provide the South African industry with very important fit-for-purpose measurement standards and measurements. This we achieve by keeping and maintaining the national measurement standards and units to an acceptable international standard, and a very important thing, disseminating to industry. That is, don't just keep and maintain. There should be a link to what we do in the economy through our dissemination to industry. Our vision as an institution that is driven by the values of measurement excellence, social responsibility, economic prosperity, and good governance is to be a central excellence that is inspired to deliver outstanding, innovative, and international comparable, and the key word there being international comparable, measurement solutions that support the country's trade, its people's quality of life, and to enable the protection of the environment. As the MISA, as you are aware, we are one of four TI institutes under the DTI. The three being the SABS, which keeps voluntary standards and conformity assessments more documentary in nature and confirming them through testing laboratories and so on. The regulator confirms our specifications, who deals with compulsory specifications and inspections, and the accreditation system, SANA, that deals with accreditation. We as NEMISA provide the base that underpins the three functions that the three institutes provide, which is measurement specifications, traceability of testing for those that do testing, and traceability link for prosecution in the case of the NRDF. And we do proficiency testing schemes and reference analysis for SANA to ensure that the labs they accredit are indeed competent to perform the tests that they perform. Our goals as an organization are divided into two parts. One part, which is a part that deals with the core mandate, which is to keep and maintain, as well as develop the national measurement standards and provide for the use of the national measurement unit. Goal number two, to ensure South African measurement system is internationally comparable. I kept on referring to this international comparability as very important. This we do by participating in activities of the International Committee of Rates, called the CIPM, through the mutual recognition arrangement, the CIPM MRA. Lately, technological advances over the past few decades are placing stringent demands on metrology and new areas such as nanotechnology, optical techniques, quantum-based technologies, material sciences, and so on, have developed so rapidly that new measurement methods are required. And that is very key. And this informs our goal number three, which is to modernize the NEMISA infrastructure and equipment through a recapitalization program that I will talk to later. The other organizational goals have to do with providing human capital for measurement to the councils. But as I indicated, there is no school that trains metrologists per se. People are trained as scientists and engineers and so on in different fields. But there is a need for measurement knowledge and measurement accuracy in those areas, and that is where NEMISA comes in terms of developing metrology. So goal number four and number five, to provide measurement knowledge and expertise and a human capital development program for metrology, to try to address those issues. And we also support the public and private enterprises through dissemination of our national measurement standards and units, as well as the expertise that we have as the NEMISA. Goal 7 is to adhere to the regulatory requirements of a public 3A, Schedule 3A public entity, and sound corporate governance. So in short, if one were to summarize the role of NEMISA, is to keep and maintain the national measurement standards, provide links of the national system, as well as the regional measurement system to the international system, to conduct research for development of measurement standards, provide training for testing, calibration, and measurement in research, which is very critical for conducting research, provide a link to international measurement systems for SADC and Sub-Saharan Africa, You will see in our research approach, we take that kind of approach because we are the measurement institute in the continent that is at the top end, that is participating at the international level. We support SMEs development by providing measurement interventions where required. This ensures package international acceptable calibration measurements and setting that assures that we have accurate healthcare monitoring, effective law enforcement, efficient environmental monitoring, competitive manufacturing, and acceptance of test results for food products and especially for the export market, and compliance testing in imported foods, especially for toxic elements and appliance safety that the NRPS does look at, and overall negating technical barriers to trade. Our products and services, I try to summarize them in that chart there. To the far left, being the top products and services, providing the national, or keeping and maintaining the national measurement standard, providing reference levels, providing reference standards, consultation, as well as R&D projects that we undertake with universities and other research councils, and knowledge dissemination, that is collaboration, and comparisons that we run in conducting proficiency testing schemes. Reference standards being very important. These are like a ruler that we use for measurements. If I say this is about 20 centimeters, I can then tell you that, okay, the bottle is about 25 or so, because I compare my known to the unknown. So for chemical testing and other testing, you require such that you are able to use as a reference standard for doing the measurements that we need to conduct. I've already spoken about the importance in playing a role in the international and regional environment. That is ensuring that we have international equivalent for our tests and measurements that we conduct, because we are traceable to a measurement standard that is comparable to the international environment. The diagram, I put it in just to try and indicate how important traceability is in this that we do. To say everything is linked up to everything else, and it goes back to what the intentions of the META Convention were when it was signed in the 18th century, that ensures that we have one system that is comparable throughout the world. That is where the metric system came into being. We have the international system of units. We have seven standard units for light, the candela, or weight, the kilogram, and so on and so on, the second for time, and so on. Those are then, as a national measurement institute, we gathered these units and other units that are derived from this in the national measurement standard. And then there is a system that ensures that the different counties and the different regions are comparable to each other, and they're able to confidently say we've measured it and it is 2.5 kilograms and so on and so on. So that is how the traceability chain works. So participating in the international community is very important. The national environment will inform the strategy that I'm going to be presenting now. But in a way that as NVISA, we don't necessarily perform the testing and the calibration that is done on the ground, that is in the factory floor and so on. We perform and keep the standard at top. That is why the pyramid line. Then you've got calibration laboratories that are accredited by SANA that do the calibration at the next level. Then you've got standard method and equipment that then gets used to then calibrate quality control and quality assurance standards that are used on the factory floor. Then you get in the marketplace that where the end user and so on that requires measurements to be performed. All this is traceable to the top. That is at the National Measurement Institute level. And the National Measurement Institute is then comparable to the other national measurement institutes and systems in other countries. The organizational structure of ENISA, which structured it in such a way that we are able to deal with the broadest of scientific requirements in terms of measurement. We have technical divisions that deals with chemical measurements, which is the chemistry division that looks at organic chemistry, inorganic chemistry. Gas, we put gas aside because it's very important when it comes to environmental pollution monitoring, those gases that go into the atmosphere. And then we have bioanalysis. Fecal metrology is the most traditional, which is a typical, if you look at it, it looks like a physics textbook. Then we have electricity and magnetism, which looks at temperature and humidity. Time and frequency becomes very important recently with our winning of the bid to host the SKA in South Africa. Time and frequency become extremely important. We've started projects of improving our time, our realization to a level that will be about 4 nanoseconds drift from the actual time that is the agreed time. The way time is kept is we have clocks that we keep, and this is very important when you start talking procurement. If you say clock, somebody might bring you a normal clock. These are constant clocks that are nuclear atomic clocks that keep the frequency in an environment where we cool the atoms to a very cold level, and then we're able to check the frequency of the oscillations of the atoms, and that gives us the time that we keep. And we now trying to push it to 4 nanoseconds. What you see is the time that we give you. What we then do with the time that we keep, we send it to the BIPM. All the other countries send their data there, and then a calculation is made to say this is the time. And then we get the time. So as you keep the time, you will keep drifting away from the actual time. So what we are trying to work towards is to make sure that we are at least drifting by 4 nanoseconds. So over a long period of time, we won't have a big shift. So this becomes very important in realizing. I mean, when you look at our transport infrastructure now, we are going rapid transport systems, we are going rail systems that are time-based. So if you miss the time, the guy on the other side reads 5 seconds behind you on this side, I don't want to think of what the consequences will be there. We have a unit that looks at ionizing radiation, that is radioactivity and dosimetry. These are coordinated by a unit that does research and technology development and technical infrastructure coordination. And all these are then supported by finance and corporate services that provide the support services for the work that we do. The work that we do is aligned to key national initiatives. And as you know, all aspects of the community are impacted by measurement standards and systems. Everything. Whether directly or indirectly, when it says a mass of maize consignment to be traded into the international market, the amount of electricity a citizen pays for in the city, or the radiation therapy a cancer patient receives, important decisions at economic, social, and medical level are based on measurement results. And the work of ENISA therefore contributes to quality of life, health and safety, as well as safety and security. I've just put that diagram there just to indicate what areas get affected in terms of contributing to the DDI's priorities as well. Aligning to the 12th national outcome, I won't talk a lot about that. That is very obvious in terms of quality of life, improved accuracy and reliability of chemical, physical and environment is important for healthcare, diagnosis, treatment, and so on and so on. So having said and given that background, where to next? What's the strategic direction of the MISA in the coming few years and way into the future? Because as a measurement institute, it is important to know that our core mandate is to keep and maintain. So keeping and maintaining cannot change 20 years down the line. It remains keeping and maintaining just the improvement of what we keep, the accuracy there of the technology that moves. The strategy is implemented at two distinct levels, that is keeping and maintaining as first one, and then development of new measurement standards and reference analysis that are needed for initiatives such as the IHF in feeding to the National Development Plan and so on, but most importantly, new technologies that are coming in. How do you measure those? When I came into the MISA, we did an analysis and we looked at how the research is structured within the MISA. We realized that only a few units were really doing cutting-edge research that makes us move into the future. The graph that I put there indicates that chemistry and RTD at the base were doing more research, whereas the traditional units like physical metrology were doing less research and doing more of the keeping and maintaining. So what we then take, which is the strategic move we are taking now today, we will do more research while we keep and maintain what needs to be kept and maintained. So the way we do it is we conduct, or we organize as, the organization into a matrix-like organizational structure that helps us break some of the silo approaches that we identify, which helps us take advantage of the project and customer focus of the project structure, while it retains the functional expertise of a functional structure, which is important in metrology. If you are to maintain somebody who knows what they do, you can't let them run correct all the time without being in a functional unit. An engineer needs to be an engineer, even if he's delivering a project for a specific output. So the matrix organizational structure is structured in that way. We then identify for startups in the coming 5 years three areas that we'll be focusing on, which is the first area is in quality of life, which is food and feed reference material program for the continent. What we look at is the food safety testing requirements that are for us. For instance, in maize, there is no body who produces reference material for testing for mycotoxins in maize because the world is not interested in testing for mycotoxins in maize. So that's just one example. There's quite a lot in Qatar, in yam, which are staple foods for us. Nobody produces those reference materials. So we running this program to focus specifically on that need for producing feed for purpose while these are internationally comparable, and that is create a market for us to be able to even sell these reference materials to the international market instead of us being the only ones that buy reference materials from the likes of NIST in the US and the PTB in Germany. If you look in page 31 to 33 of the strategic plan document, with broken this up into specifics as what will be delivered. Main deliverable here is to develop a facility for producing this reference material, not just for South Africa, but for the continent as a whole. The way we structure the cross-cutter project in such a way that we'll be able to integrate the skills development program into this project, because with the new reference material that comes in, the PhD student that was working on that development of the reference material now already got the skills input into the development of the organization as a whole, as opposed to just having development that does not produce the skills specifically. The second cross-cut-up project that we're focusing on focuses on green economy measurement tools. This is developed, divided into two distinct areas. The one area is focusing specifically on production of food products and goods within the green economy space, while the other one looks at environmental monitoring, such as greenhouse gas emissions and environmental pollutions from persistent organic pollutants or polyaromatic hydrocarbons that end up in our water, in soil, and so on, from what we do in our manufacturing environment. In terms of energy saving, we will be developing national measurement standards for LEDs. We'll develop an AC power standard to make sure that when the LEDs are either produced locally or imported, they have a standard that they must meet. I think we've all experienced a situation where we are told these are LED lights that will last you so many years, and then you go put it on, then you have to change it earlier than the normal bulb that you would have changed. And those are the actual focus areas that we will be looking at. But another important aspect is traceability for nanostructure-based material for solar cells. I think most of us are trying to move to photovoltaic cells for solar energy for our houses. How are they buying the real thing? And what is the standard? And that is the development that we'll be looking at in that cross-cutter project will be focusing on that. The third project, which I want to talk a lot about because it's a consolidation of projects we've been running over the past couple of years, is measurement in support of local manufacturing, that is for beneficiation and for competitiveness. There's a suite of measurements that are needed by industry, and we'll be looking at those. One that is very close to my heart is something that is called tribology. Wear and tear, simple wear and tear for locomotive wheels. As we go through the big railway infrastructure build program, there is issues of wear and tear that we need to be able to measure before we import or manufacture ourselves the inputs that will be going into that program. Mechanical measurements in terms of hardness and tensile strength, strain, as well as wear and tear, advanced measurement techniques and instrumentation in nuclear acoustics, laser technologies. And here, one of my, these are called wish, is that we start developing instrumentation fit for use on the African continent, because it's one thing to have high-tech equipment that when they come here, our heat just makes it useless to operate. That, in a nutshell, honorable members, is the way we are looking at positioning the NMISA and going forward, how we will be running our project. And from this, we will develop more research and feasibility studies that determine what exactly does industry want and what then needs to be the development that the National Measurement Institute put in place to make sure that we respond to those industry needs. I will now move on to the actual specifics of what shall we deliver in the next couple of years. I think 2015, 2016. This is put in a performance matrix that is in the ATP that was distributed. As mandated, the NMISA provides for the use of measurement units of the International System of Units and certain other units. The designation of national measurement standards and units, and for keeping and maintaining the national measurement units and the standards. This also includes improving the existing national measurement standards and methods, as well as developing new national measurement standards, secondary standards, and new reference materials. And this will be measured by the key performance indicators that are presented there. We will increase the number of national measurement standards that are gazetted to about 55 by the year 2017-18. We will annually improve at least an average of 16 national measurement standards. So that means 2015-16 we will improve 15 of the national measurement standards that we keep and maintain. In 2016-17 we will improve 15. In 2017-18 we will improve 17. So it's a rolling program that says in as much as we're developing new ones, we need to improve the ones that we're having going forward. That is a national obligation that we will be delivering on. On national equivalence, we will be doing this as part of the META convention system. We as NMISA ensure measurement comparability by participating in the activities of the International Committee for Weights and Measures, simply known as the CITM. This includes active participation in consultative committees and demonstrated measurement capability as published in the key comparison database of the VITM. It is very important to submit what is called CMC, claims of measurement capability. So if we are exporting to a specific council and we send there a certificate of testing and measurement, all they do go and check, does the country have a measurement capability in this test that they perform? So they go to the GIDM database, they pull it, South Africa has got a CMC registered in this test. That's what we call it, measured one, accepted everywhere. Because just by doing that, we facilitate trade. So we'll be participating in those committees. That's one of the measures, 10 of them. We are now participating in only 10, I mean in only 9 of the 10. So this financial year we'll be looking at adding the 10th one and participating in all the consultative committees of the CIPM. We will be, as you know, we participate in most of the committees of the technical committees of standards and so on. That is one of the things that we will be doing. In terms of increasing our number of EMCs as published in the key comparison database, we are now sitting at 411. We will be increasing it to 425 by 2017-2018. So that is a very key aspect. How the international system determines the measurement capability of a country is by checking how many claims of measurement capability have you submitted in the KCED. I think if you compare us to our continent, we have now 411. The one that follows us has about 9 or 10, which is Egypt, and then Kenya is still trying. So this is the result of the work that scientists do in terms of intercomparison internationally and realizing the measurement standards and then submitting those claims in the database. A very important thrust that we will be focusing on is the recapitalization and modernization of NMISA. We were fortunate enough to have a triple key registered by National Treasury for the recapitalization of NEMISA, for which we have received funds for conducting a detailed feasibility study for a new NEMISA infrastructure. As you noted in our strategic plan, one of the areas we raised as a key risk area is the area of aging infrastructure. The buildings that we are in, the one that I put in was commissioned in 1960 as laboratories for the National Measurement Laboratory. Technology advancements have moved such that the environmental requirements for those buildings are no longer sufficient to house newer technologies. So we have reached what we call the limit of improvement that we can ever do on those labs to make sure that they meet the new requirements. So it is one thing to say we need to buy new equipment, modernize it in the meter, but where are we going to place those equipment? So we're conducting that feasibility study for a new NEMISA. That would be much more forward-looking than just saying, let's take what we have and put in a new building. Secondly, those equipment that we can move after the new building is developed, we have started to procure them. We've had capital expenditure this year of just under $100 million. To recapitalize some of the equipment that we can move. But as soon as the feasibility study for the new building is concluded, then we will start looking at a bigger infrastructure and equipment procurement first. What I'm highlighting, a measurement standard is not just the equipment that is sitting there. It is the equipment, the building, and the individuals that operate it. So, what is important? Let me give an example with the fourth risk, where it's the whole building that gets structured into a fourth machine, not just the machine that is in the whole building, that as you do the measurement, it's now taking account of the whole environment, because force is affected by resistance and all the other things. You try to eliminate those that when you measure accurately. As part of this, we've included an HCD program. As I indicated in the way we approach research and development, there is a strong human capital development program that is interlinked to this recapitalization program. Such that when we buy the new equipment, we link the development of our MSc and PhD candidates to that new equipment. Such that it takes time sometimes to deliver our equipment because they are custom made. So we then send our students to the manufacturer as they are manufactured and putting it together for us. Our students are part of that process. We also contribute to the technical infrastructure support. There are a few KPIs that are related to that. And these are participation in the technical committees within technical infrastructure institutes, as well as publication of articles in peer-reviewed and refereed journals that ensure that we contribute to the knowledge generation in the environment. For dissemination, we then have presentations at conferences as well as public meetings within the science environment. When I say public, sometimes it's not public in the general context, but public in terms of the science and technology state. In terms of learning and growth perspective, we look at postgraduate partners that we offer at the institute. This year, we had a target of having 10. We then will increase this to 12 annually. Remember, this is 12 PhD students. So we've looked at the size of the organization and what we can be able to contribute in terms of providing the training and mentorship that is required for a PhD or an MSc degree. And 12 is what we anticipate we'll be able to meet going forward. If we were able to increase our staff complement to slightly higher than what we have now, we'll be able to take more. So it's the staff within the MISA will have to participate in supervision of the students. It's not just the university that develops the students. The other standard measurement of what percentage of budget we spend on human capital development, we're looking at a target of 2%. This year, just to let you know, we spend about 3% of our human resource spend on human capital development. We also have an internship program as well as learnership that we run through the organization. The other measure that we'll be looking at in the APP within the stakeholder and customer perspective is dissemination of the national measurement standard, which we will measure using the revenue that we generate from calibration laboratories, not calibration for the general market. And then we'll also look at a skilled and capable workforce. We will look at number of training courses that we organize for industry, not just for ourselves, because we have a role to play in the industry as a whole. There's nobody who has that function but ourselves. The business, internal business as well as financial perspective, will be measuring the normal compliance to regulation. So we'll be looking at last year we had put a KPI that said an unqualified audit opinion, which we managed to attain last year. But here we're just looking at method of expenditure versus the income that we've received, as well as the percentage of total CAPEX budget that we received, that we spend to do what we rightfully say we need. But when we receive those resources, do we spend? The projected budget for the year 2015-16 is about 264 million. This would increase gradually up to 2017-18, where we anticipate that around that time there will be a need for a huge injection for the building of the new infrastructure, having gone through the processes of doing the feasibility study, going through the triple P process in line with the feasibility study that will be put on the table and the requirements that will be put on the table as to how should we go in ensuring that not only 2 years from now, but 20, 30 years from now, we are still able to keep and maintain the national measurement standard at an internationally comparable level. I want to talk to those two figures. I just wanted to highlight the importance of compensation of employees within NEMISA, because we are a knowledge-based organization, so most of your cost is going to be on human resource expenditure. Some of the specific risks identified are highlighted during my presentation, but the key ones that I wanted to bring out here is the fact that we haven't been moving with technological advancement to a level that we caught up, or we were on par with the global first phase advancement in technology. And this may lead to inadequate comparability. I was at the General Council of the BITM, the CITM in November last year. The kilograph, which is the last remaining architect standard, will be redefined by 2017. So now we have a Latin American artifact that we keep at NIMISA, which is a copy of the original that is kept at the BITM, which gets calibrated every 8 years to the original copy, the so-called IPK, International Prototype of the Kilogram. Now this is going to be redefined so that all measurement units are realizations of constants of nature. So the kilogram is redefined as a space between two groups. The one group uses chemistry, the Avogadro's constant, which counts the number of atoms in a specific unit. I think this one they are using cesium. And then they will then determine when you have that number, then it's a kilogram. But you need to be able to count them so you can give a kilogram. So it's the realization of that constant. Then there is the watt balance, which is using electricity and magnetism to say when you have got this magnetic force and you or magnetic field and you apply a weight within that magnetic field, considering the gravitational acceleration, if it moves from year to year, it's then a kilogram. That is how things are going to be measured going forward. So if we don't keep up, then we might end up not being able to be internationally comparable. And this is the risk that we identify. And this, what this does, when I got into the NIMISA, I mean, I completed my master's in 1999. Even then, the technologies that were used are advanced than what the technologies that are at the NIMISA. The technologies at the NIMISA are accurate because that focus is on accuracy. Now, what has been happening over the years is as technologies move, students come out of universities having learned advanced technology and we employ them into NIMISA. It takes us longer to train them into the new technology. So, not only does it affect our ability to measure, it also affects our ability to develop and train new scientists. And our approach of saying, in as much as we'll do, keep the functional unit, we will also have project units so that we can, if there's a need for statisticians, we pull statisticians to do a specific function in a project and then they go back to their units. If there's a need for an expert in laser technology, we pull them in. So we will do that if we have newer technologies and it's easier to train the students that are coming in. I use the example of saying my cell phone was that big Nokia brick. If I give that to my daughter now, she doesn't even know where to put it on. But even the Samsung S6 that came out yesterday, she figured it out so quickly and started teaching you how it works. And that's the way technology works. And the same principle applies to our ability to train new scientists in the measurement world. That is the few strategic risks, the HR risks that I've referred to, and compliance to regulatory frameworks and so on. All in all, honorable members, this is trying to meet that which we try to achieve, measured once, accepted everywhere, ensuring that the nation's well-being is assured and ensuring that we are able to share it with other parts of the world, including our region, as the African region. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the presentation. team members now is open for members for questions of clarity, comments, or input. This is a very interesting presentation. I'm new in this committee. More than any other presentation, she is dealing with the real life issues, which maybe we take for granted most of the time. But she is an open member. William, Kobe, Honorable, sorry. Honorable. Okay.
Thanks, Chairperson. Firstly, I want to welcome the presentation. I too am a new member to this committee, and yes, absolutely, I agree with the Chairperson that we definitely take measures for granted. I just want to make a few comments and then I have one question. In South Africa, we need to move to an industrialization of our economy, and without these measurements, it's just going to be impossible. What I find very interesting is, if we don't have these accurate measurements that are recognized internationally, we're never going to be able to manufacture or beneficiate any of our materials. We might be able to do that, but nobody will believe that our kilogram is a kilogram, and therefore we won't be able to export it. So I think that everybody understands the importance of measurements, but as the Chairperson said, we do take it for granted, and everything, our whole lives are based around measurements. For instance, I sleep in a bed, and it's a length, and then I eat some food, which is a volume, and then I wake up at a specific time, and I drive to work, which is, I don't know, distance and speed, I don't know. So we do it all the time. So my question is, how much does your organization need to keep relevant for the next 100 years? For instance, if you continue with this budget of $304 million in 2017-2018, is that sufficient? And then in 2018-2019, $323 million, is that sufficient? Or is this like minimum that you can do because the National Minister of Finance has said we have to cut corners and, you know, tighten our belts? I'd like to know what is the real figure. Do you have a figure of ½ a billion rand? I mean, what do you need? Because if you fail and then we industrialize, nobody's going to believe us. They don't trust South Africa's stuff. That's what they'll say. No, thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you very much, Chairperson. I want to join in the corner that we welcome the presentation from Lenin. You know, what I was interested in, you said it, as a local in the community, you know, measured well and accepted everywhere. Because that is the crux of my question, that how frequently do you review this? Because they will talk too much on issues of assisting our project in South Africa of industrialization. When I'm talking about that, I'm talking the question of value addition in particular. Because we add value into a particular product to make it a finished good. So issues of weight are very important to determine the cost or the price of that. Issues of weight has. We talk about our steel that we want to produce and make it a finished good and sell it to the outside world. We talk about whatever I hear about time that it should take to produce, time it must take to transport and other related matters. So now, if we are enabled to have that particular capability of reviewing and making sure that all our measurements are in line with the international ones, so well, what is happening? You have made a significant example in the middle. That there will be a regular conference that will review the grammar. And then in terms of our own initiatives, how far are we in terms of having our own contribution in South Africa? That should be imposed on us. We have our own ideas. That's the first question. I'm not sure that it's a loaded question, but it's the first question. In line with that, is our ability to have the capabilities to have them. It's the question of infrastructure that they have, and the word that I use here, but I can't say it now, the word that I use. Let's take for an example, an institution that is able to do all these things, the absence of that, because if your own equipment is ancient, you know, ask your own calculation, in a position to move with the resource of the 21st century. And what needs to be done to make sure, but if this does not happen in 20 years to come, we might be in serious things, you know, through the issues of the better life of all, or changing the life of all people. One of the things is the issues in solar panels, solar heater, question of geyser. And one, when I was there, the South African Bureau Standard, I spoke about the question of generators that are being imported in South Africa. And one of them was just a mystery people was maintained in the house. That's when we came out, the world was going to finally die late in South Africa. You see, and these are the issues that I'm talking about in a certain amount of data line. One of the examples I spoke about those. Those first things that I went to, okay, they coined there. They came into South Africa. They weren't there in Europe, it's not the same as the weather there here. And then our son and his, they did those things like hell. I want to be there. Because there were many, there were not many people in South Africa. And the weather that they have in South Africa was dark, important, and children, you know, are being bent around the country, especially in poor communities. So these are the issues that are very important about this particular department. And to me, the issue of capability and the building an institution that is going to be able to make you to do your work is very important. So where are you with that discussion? What are the possibilities? What is your proposal that maybe this parliament can assist in that process? Because it's very important. Yeah, well, that one is the second question. The last one is the OIT recapitalization project. We called it recapitalization project. So I include the question of the new institution, the new equipment, and so forth. The last one, are our universities producing the graduates that we want? Are they assisting us in this course? Through EMISA. You see, what are the challenges of the products that we receive from our universities? How many a day that we are producing in South Africa? You know, we might find that within a year we produce only 50. You know, so how many are we producing? And how many are we retaining? They are not poached. One, by private institutions. Two, by the international community.
I must also add my voice to those that complimented the presenter for the presentation. Truly eye-opening, and it makes us South Africans proud that we have got this kind of institution. Because not every country has got this. However, my concern is on compliance. We live at a time when there are so many faiths, and we are traditionally a community that never stuck to certain very specific measurements. I'm thinking about traditional healers who just estimate, they will tell you half a glass and rather come in various forms, various sizes. I just think that if we were to comply with these very strict standards, would be a matter of nation in many ways. But how about compliance? Does NISA and NISA know whether people comply? And if they don't, has NISA got any muscle to force them to comply or to take action against those that do not comply? And if NISA and NISA does not have that arm, can they therefore refer cases of non-compliance to any other institution to make sure that we comply? Because if they take so much trouble, and if they go to such lengths in acquiring the expertise, which is very rare, honestly, the ultimate aim is to ensure that we comply. Thank you.
Right. Let's follow up immediately from this question of compliance. It was maybe when you answered, you clarify who ensures compliance. As you are working with SAPS, SANAS, NRCs, who actually, do you have authority to take these three institutions into task? I think yesterday, here in one presentation, when we were discussing, there was just a mention of sometimes you get these products coming from outside, accredited with standards of South Africa, not having gone past through SABS, but having the same of SABS. So how do you deal with such problems? The other question to better with the problem now, which is facing us, are there locally aligned technologies that can be used for alternative energy grids, biofuels or green energy? You talked about this problem of infrastructure and your building. What are the timelines for the feasibility study? And when does the minister plan to start building this structure, this infrastructure which you were talking about? If you look maybe around, are there in the act which governs your operation and gives you your mandate, are there anything which you think maybe they are an inhibition to your functioning as an institution, or is there anything that can be amended and be improved? Maybe just to close the gap in as far as your operations are concerned when you implement your mandate. So those will be the questions so far.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Usually, when questions are asked, I do not say. But the question asked, being a measurement scientist, asked to give an answer that will be a ballpark figure, is always challenging. I am referring to question around how much does the organization need to perform at its best? A clear indication I can give is that the funding provided now is not sufficient to make the organization perform at the top end of what it is capable of doing. This has been a historical process of reducing the funding over the years to what is beyond the bare minimum or below the bare minimum. And then we started over time making do with what we have got. When I came in as CEO doing my analysis and assessment, sitting down with the team and really determining what should we be doing. We came to a conclusion that starting next year, increasing the budget of the MISA by 150% will not solve the problem. A progressive development and re-establishment of capabilities that we had and that we should have needs to be done. One of the issues, if you look at our challenges and situation analysis in the strategic plan, you will note that the availability of skills and resources is a big issue. And measurement standards are not just the equipment and machinery. It is the equipment and machinery and the individual. So when we do this development, we need to take a much longer term outlook. It is quoted generally that it takes 5 years to develop a metrologist that can compete and participate at the international level, at the level at which we are actually measured for our capabilities and so on. So the amount required, we are currently conducting a feasibility study that is an in-depth study that not only looks at the building but looks at the requirements of the nation as a whole on the skills that are required, on the measurements that are required. Then we will be able to define what the requirements are. If I do my own estimation of what it will take and doing a benchmark, what we try to do is, in typical metrology style, in our strategic plan, we did a benchmarking with other international NMIs that are performing at a level that we aspire to perform at, but also did a benchmark of NMIs that are performing at a level that South Africa requires for our industrialization drive, for our drive going back to manufacturing and so on. And it shows that we are lagging about 40 to 50% behind in funding compared to the sizes of those institutions. But the exact figure shall be provided, not exact per se, but a good educated estimate that is not only focusing on what we have, but focusing on what we need so that we can meet the requirements. I mean, as technology moved, there are other needs in nanotechnology measurement that we haven't started touching, nano manufacturing. Now, in the ACT for this year, one of the things that we're going to be delivering is a feasibility study for measurement for additive manufacturing, that is 3D printing, which if I look at it as a scientist, I look at it in the context of the cell phone and the landline, fixed line telephone. In Africa, we are connected, but it's not to the fixed line telephone. Our penetration of cell phone is about 150-160%. If I look around the room, you might find people with 3 or 4 cell phones as we're sitting here. Which means our move, I believe, manufacturing going forward will be in additive manufacturing, 3D printing and so on, which eliminates some of the needs, just like the cell phone eliminated some of the needs to pull the landline infrastructure. Additive manufacturing will also eliminate some of the needs for putting huge infrastructure for manufacturing going forward. And what we'll be doing as a feasibility study, determine exactly where that is going and what would the measurement requirement be for that kind of additive manufacturing going forward. So in answering that question, in short, the estimation is we are much lower than what we should be. One. Two, we need to look at our needs, and we're conducting the feasibility study. Allow me to mix the answering of that question with the question that was asked around the timeline for the feasibility study and the development of the new NEMISA. We are looking at the timeline of the end of the year to have the feasibility study delivered, and hopefully the process of the EEE process approval, the treasury approval one that is needed. We are hoping that by the end of the year we would have that delivered. Then within the first two quarters of the following financial year, we will then focus on treasury approval two, which is more around securing funding required. And I think that is where the portfolio committee's influence in ensuring that the funding, if it says 3 billion for developing the new building, that funding is motivated for and made available. Then towards the tail end of the year, we'll then be looking at the processes of procuring the partner that will be partnering us in developing this institution and really developing the capability internally of managing such infrastructure. We're talking here of temperature variations of plus minus one. If we say 21 degrees Celsius, it cannot be 27 today and 18 tomorrow. It's got to be at that constant level. So you need that capability, which we do not have in the country at the moment. Places like the CSIR does have some of that capability, but their requirements are not as stringent as ours. So we need to be developing those, and that's why I am saying, as a methodologist, that question gives me some challenge in answering, because I cannot give you a specific answer, but just indicate the process that we are moving towards in quantifying that. The second question is a much straightforward one. How frequently do we review our measurements continuously? It's the direct answer. How do we do it continuously? We are always participating in the international environment. Just to give you an example, if I was getting on the plane yesterday, I got an SMS to say there's an artifact waiting at customs that is being held by our customs because it looks dangerous and so on. The measurement artifact that we use that needs to be released, because we are conducting an international data comparison, where what we do is, if let's take LEDs as an example, somebody would characterize an LED and call that lab a pilot laboratory. They then know the value of what the characteristics of that LED are, and then they send it across to other NMIs to measure. And then give their various other measurements, and then they can then say, this laboratory came out spot on within an uncertainty of such and such, which is within the acceptable range, and these laboratories were off. Then those laboratories do not have the capability to measure that specific unit. So that is why the importance of the international process is so hard within our environment. Now, as I indicated, the KPIs for the year, we will be renewing and upgrading at least 15 of our national measurement standards a year. So to make sure that we keep up, we renew them, and as we renew them, we do the international intercomparison. We then participate in the international consultative committees for the META convention arrangement. So that makes us confident that when we measure up, we are accepted everywhere. We were fortunate in this system. For the first time
in the history of the BIPM since 70-something. An applicant was appointed to the CIPM, the International Committee of Weights and Measures, and this is a South African. A second applicant was appointed to a committee that appoints the CIPM, and this African is a South African. It just happens to be this African that's sitting right here talking to you right now. The other African is appointed to the CIPM is Dr. Bernard Law, who is appointed to be a member of the CIPM and president of the CCRI. CCRI deals with Ionizing Radiation Consultative Committee on Ionizing Radiation, that is nuclear physics and so on, which we see as NMISA as a strategic position because of the nuclear build program that we are going into. Measurements in that area become very important. So that is how we ensure that our measurements are internationally comparable. We've got those 10 pieces, which we are members of 9. We will be getting into the 10 to ensure that we are not yet left behind. The other question related to value addition. Do we ensure that we keep abreast with measurements as we do value addition and so on? We, as NMISA, our act instructs that we have what we call technical advisory forum and a consultative forum that advises the board. So when there are new developments in electricity, for instance, we have a technical advisory forum that will indicate what are the new products coming into stream, what are the new technologies coming in, and then we then inform our strategic plan based on that and provide the measurement requirement for that. That is why the issue I was mentioning earlier of your additive manufacturing, 3D printing has become an issue. Now we have to develop a capability so that as we add air, we are able to measure. In the area of chemical measurement, we've made tremendous moves. I think we are one of the top NMIs in the world that is strong in chemical measurement for toxins and other related measurements, and it's got nothing to do with the fact that I'm an alchemist as the CEO. It's just we've got very good scientists that are doing the work that needs to be done. So we encourage participation from industry to keep informing us of what's coming next, and then we are able to provide the measurement requirements. Our experience in areas where the testing capability does not exist in the country as yet, we at NMISA will conduct the testing. After we develop the standard, develop the method, we'll conduct the testing for industry until the capability is developed, and then we hand it over to the laboratories that have developed that capability. If not, we will then have to work with our parent department to ensure that through the enterprise development processes that they run, we are able to empower entrepreneurs that want to enter in those, because how I put it is, a PhD in science would rather play and improve things than sit the whole week doing routine testing samples that come in. It's a waste of resources. So it's better we keep those skills there, doing what they do best, and then head over to entrepreneurs and then carry the routine testing. A question around ability to build manufacturing capabilities. It's a very interesting one. It is a chicken and egg situation. To manufacture, you need to measure. And without a strong measurement capability, your manufacturing capability will diminish. If you look at who funds their measurement infrastructure best internationally, NIST is the U.S. National Measurement Institute. It's called the National Institute of Standards and Technology. They are the highest funded. When we talk of
Nobel Prize laureates in science in the past 5 years. Two came from here. That means their investment in measuring infrastructure is very critical. Over the past couple of years, when investment in government departments in the U.S. has been going down, funding has been going down, NIST was moved from a parliamentary grant that comes from, is it Congress in their case, to getting funding directly from the White House. That it's a strategic, specialized project that they fund NIST directly. It's not something that gets discussed at that level. The strategic importance of that is realized to a point that for every manufacturing, I mean 3D manufacturing now, printing, what do we call this, the Texas, the sneakers in the U.S. language, they are now printing sneakers for, it's my book, printing those sneakers, because they have the measurement capability to ensure that the required standards are met and the market will accept the product. And as I looked at the other PCB in Germany, I mean, the automotive industry in Germany is strong based on the fact that they put PCB in Braunschweig, which does measurements for everything that is related to automotive industry. And that is why I think it's a chicken and egg. So empower the measurement infrastructure, then you are able to support the manufacturing development that are coming through. In my previous job, I used to serve as an enterprise development practitioner for the Innovation Hub, commercializing technologies from research institutes like the CSIR and the universities. And one of the challenges that we're facing in commercialization, while we have that chasm between research, which is high-tech research, but we don't have products here, it's because this infrastructure in South Africa does not exist. When you need to then get input from the measurement infrastructure, you get what you can get from the NMIT, which is brilliant, but you need to be moving into a competitive space. Now you must pay a lot of money going overseas to get. That's why even our development for the photovoltaic cells and so on could not be commercialized here. They were developed here, but they then were commercialized in Germany because of that infrastructure that supports the manufacturer. So it is important, small scale, we are able to support that, those that are manufacturing, but the high-tech equipment that we are dealing with, we are not able to manufacture here. At NISA, we are able to set up measurement-grade equipment or standard, but not commercial-grade equipment that are required by industry out there. You spoke of generators, and there was a question that I will link to that, which relates to compliance, as to who ensures compliance. It's a question that I think would be best answered by the DDR. The way the TPI infrastructure is structured is that the NMISA looks at realization of scientific standards, the maintenance of those standards that are fit for purpose for our industry, and dissemination to industry, ensuring that those that need to comply need to know how and what they need to comply to. But then there is the SABS that does their part with voluntary standards, and the NRCS with compulsory specifications. And I think the question you are relating to, if I look, and here I'm going to give my own assessment of our development and where we go. If I look at the Legal Methodology Act that was enacted last year, that's an attempt in going in that direction, that we start having more regulatory compulsory specifications that are regulated and inspected.
Because that is the key. It's one thing to say something is compulsory and our inspections are not up to speed. That's why we'll have things stemmed. It meets South African specifications when in reality it does not meet those certifications. So it is that infrastructure. The standard becomes an independent body that assures that there is accreditation for those that are going to be tested, so that whatever they produce, we can trust that if they say it meets the specification, they are competent to do it and they are accredited to do that. So it's a quality infrastructure arrangement that needs to work together very strongly and very in power. And it takes me back to the issue of the budget. How much do we fund this quality infrastructure with? And I think a mind shift that says if we are to be competitive and safe at the same time, we need to fund this infrastructure that allows us to ensure quality, safety and competence going into the international market. So there was a question around recapitalization, which related to universities producing the skills that we want. And Honorable Kong was asking, are universities producing in partnership with NEMISA? Not at the level that will keep us competitive. We have started re-engaging the universities lately. I have taken a roadshow going to the universities and talking to the different faculty on the need to produce scientists that are at the level that they can be trained as methodologists. We've taken it further with the University of Johannesburg to develop a curriculum for methodologists to be trained and produced as methodologists. It would be a first. It's never been done anywhere. UCT runs a course in uncertainty of measurement, which is statistical analysis that is required to ensure that your measurement is accurate. In measurement terms, in astrology, we don't talk about accuracy, we talk about uncertainty. So that when you tell us what your uncertainty on what you are telling us is a specific measurement. So we have started that. It's not at a level that would keep us competent and competitive for the long term. Hence, we started our own XCD program internally. We are trying to overcome that by engaging with measurement institutes internationally. I'll give an example of the Korean Research Institute for Standards and Sciences. We just had a PhD graduate return to NEMISA last month, who spent 3 years at CRIS training in gas metrology. What we mentioned in this specific APC is that we'll be sending another scientist to VU in the Netherlands to be trained in technologies for analytical chemistry. So we try to use those institutions that have got university links. Like CRIS has got a technical university link to CRIS. VU in the Netherlands has got the same arrangement. And we are trying to learn that model so that we can bring it home eventually. The insurance of compliance, which was asked by the Honorable Chairperson, how do we ensure compliance to this standard? I think Honorable Nisman also spoke to the same question. It is similar to the answer I gave earlier around the quality infrastructure being the one that works together to provide a quality solution for the country. So the NEMISA in our mandate, we do not have the function to ensure compliance. However,
in terms of law enforcement and enforcing all those compliance, if there is a dispute in a court of law, the act empowers us that once we conduct the measurement, our measurement will be considered as the most correct. So once we measure, we settle the case. We remain independent of the regulatory process. So it's that separation of roles and duties that is important in a quality infrastructure, because if I set the standard and I also ensure compliance, I'll be biased. It is called conflict of interest. So we keep the time, and we then ensure that the people that are to comply to a specific time, that we ensure independently of being the ones that police. Locally, allowing technologies that are to be used for alternatives in terms of energy generation. That's one similar question that gives me as a meteorologist and a discomfort, because I cannot give you a specific answer, and I'm a meteorologist. But there are technologies that are available. If I'm to give you my own personal position, solar power is a technology we as a country should consider, because we have got more sun than anybody else in the world. As a continent, we've got more sun. We engage with the PTB, who have got about 60% less sun than we have in Germany. And they are putting a lot of energy and money into development, into photovoltaic cells. For our sustainability, I, as a scientist, I'm clearly stating, not as an emitter, as a scientist, I say the greatest natural resource we have as a continent is the sun. We should learn how to use the sun better for our own sustainability. So if we are to fund university research, we should be funding research into solar technologies left, right, and center. And if we do that with the kind of budget that it takes to turn this research into products at the end of the day, we will be sustainable as a continent. But I believe until then, we will have challenges with sustainability. There are technologies of wind, there are other technologies of waste, there are other technologies that are touted as the best. Our premise mostly on a consumption-based economy. If you say waste, we don't generate the same kind of waste that the U.S. generates. So our waste technology is limited. We don't have the same amount of wind that the other countries in the north have, but sun we have. I think that's where I will end the sermon, honorable members.
The COO want to come in on some of the questions.
Thank you. No, I think the CEO already responded, but I think just in terms of the Legal Meteorology Act, I think Honourable Mungus is in response to your question. The NRCS does have a number of instruments that it has at its disposal of the regulated products. So if the fees are good, they're able to stop those sales, they're able to prosecute the vendors. These are of regulated products in terms of health and safety. So there are a number of instruments that are available for non-compliance within the market. And these are administered at the ports of entry and then also at manufacturing facilities. So there is a team of inspectors that go out and assess compliance. Thank you.
I'm sure now we are left with about 10, because we must end at 11. You wanted a follow-up.
Thanks, Chair. I just need to follow up on, I didn't quite get when you said that you can set up measurement equipment, but you can't set up manufacturing measurement equipment. And if I got that right, is that process that you can't do fundamentally stalling our capacity to manufacture in those areas? I didn't understand what you meant by that. So what you were saying, were you saying that if you had more money, you could set up measurement equipment in manufacturing so that we could manufacture stuff in South Africa as opposed to importing foreign stuff for Scottish Science, for example?
Let me put it. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I indicated that it's a chicken and egg situation. For your manufacturing, you need accurate measurement capability. We can set up the accurate measurement equipment, as the NEMEA, which is some of the human capital development areas that we're moving into. But at this stage, we need that accurate measurement infrastructure so that you can be able to support manufacturing downstream. The setting up of those accurate measurement equipment, some of them have now become commercial in nature, wherein, for instance, 40% of the budget we spent on procurement of capital equipment this year was spent on National Metrology Institute of another council, which means that, let me take this in the U.S. as an example, and the example of the Watt Balance Experiment. They are participating in the Watt Balance Experiment. That is, they are developing Watt Balance as a scientific experiment that will realize the kilogram eventually. Once that is accepted and the kilogram is redefined, they will hand over that technology to a U.S. firm to manufacture Watt Balances for other NMIs in the world. So that is the capability that being in the cutting edge of technology allows us to, after developing the technology, then hand over to our local economy to manufacture and exploit the gaps that are open in the market. Where we've done well, and I must mention this, is where we've developed the wool fiber mesh, which is used to grade wool at the point of production. We developed it at the MISA, and now we've commercialized it. And I saw the reports that are coming in now. The U.S. Wool producers and the Australian producers of wool are the ones that are buying a lot of this equipment, because it gives the producer at the primary base the power to determine what the quality is before he can take it to the market and be at the mercy of the market. We have, when the portfolio committee visited NEMEA, we've showed and demonstrated the length measurement tool that we developed, those fit for purpose measurement equipment that I was referring to, that is relevant for the African continent, where usually length measurement requires lasers, ability to characterize lasers and so on, which requires a laboratory that is with those specific environmental conditions. But here we've developed a mobile measurement tool that you can go and calibrate rules in the field, which is something that is relevant for our continent as a whole. So that is that manufacturing capability that I'm talking about, as opposed to setting up the measurement standards themselves. So the development needs to start there and then grow outward to the economy.
Yeah,
is based on the question of the reliability of these measurements, even if they are international. Of late, Captain, I found that I was wearing 6.5. Now they look 6.5, I'm forced to be wearing 7, because I can't get 6.5. And then how is that determined? And then you find that a target from Italy is 38, it's 15, but 38 from the US has not, it's very big for me. And these are the issues, where do you say 16 from?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. It makes me want to leap out of my body and get very excited, because that means we understand the value of metrology. When we say we keep and maintain the national measurement standard and certain other standards, we say exactly that. What you must do, and I know it's going to help you, just go to the internet, Google size comparisons, you will get a table that tells you 38 in the UK is size 40 in the US, and so on and so on, because they have measured a 38 based on an internationally agreed standard. Because remember, the UK uses inches versus centimeters. So when they say 38 inches, it's not 38 centimeters. It's a different measurement unit. So it is the international measurement or metrology well that brings those measurement units to a common agreement, so that you are able to look at it quickly and say, okay, if it says this and it says UK, then it means I'm at this size. 6.5 and so on. It's exactly that. I mean, it is the importance of the international metrology system and always participating in the international well. How about in Foschini, Truex, Woolworth, and so on? Do not take that into account. And they just put things on the shelf when they don't really check, is it a 38 in the UK? Is it a 6.5 for shoes in the UK? I mean, for me, I got shocked when I got to the US and I wanted to buy a shoe, and I had to buy a size 13, and I'm like, what? I know I've got a big foot, but 13 is taking a bit too far. But then I started realizing, okay, it's that convention of agreement onto measurement. And this is exactly why you might find something saying it complies when it's not using the exact standard that it must comply with. So it is important to maintain this system.
Thank you, CEO, for a very informative and exciting presentation. I'm sure the committee will keep on interacting, you are interacting with the department. But I'm sure you will invite the committee through the chair so that we have this fill out the scientists and get this language too far from you guys when so that they can attend your awards function. With those words, member, thank you very much. We have come to the end of our meeting. Thank you very much.